Why would I regret that?
Well,
that's like asking a veterinarian, do you regret helping that person's animal? You know, no, a vet wouldn't say yes.
Well, wait a minute, Tom Yelk. I mean, but he was a man. And it was a compassionate murder, but you murdered him.
But it was a man whose life didn't measure up anymore.
Just a minute or two from Mike Wallace's interview last night on 60 Minutes with Dr. Jack Kevorkian. There, Kevorkian comparing the life of the man that he murdered, the murder that actually put him in prison finally after 130 assisted suicides, with a veterinarian euthanizing an animal, a dog, a cat. Even Mike Wallace had a hard time buying that one. We're going to be listening to that 60 Minutes feature last night with Mike Wallace and Jack Kevorkian. You saw it last night. We're going to react to it today, and we'd like your reaction. If you saw 60 Minutes, what did you think of Jack Kevorkian's? Well, he tried to make the case that what he did wasn't wrong. He still stands by it and shouldn't have gone to prison. It's Audio Open Lines in the first hour of Issues Etc. today. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can email us right here in the studio as well. We're coming to you live this Monday, the 4th of June. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. We'll be listening to all of that interview between Mike Wallace and Jack Kevorkian in this first hour. Pastor Brent McGuire will join us in the second hour. Jesus prays his famous prayer from Gethsemane. He says, if it is possible for this cup to pass me by, nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. What is going on in this prayer? What is Jesus suffering? Is he afraid of the physical torture and agony he knows he is about to suffer? Or is there something more to it? We'll answer that question in the second hour of the program today. Pastor Matt Nelson will join us at 5 o'clock in the first part of the third hour to talk about the Bible and the environment. He's written an article in a recent issue of the Lutheran Witness magazine titled, Is God Green? And then a little bit more Audio Open Lines in the last half hour of the program, starting at 5:30. We heard from Brian McLaren, the emergent church leader, author of that book, A Generous Orthodoxy, and now the new president of Sojourners, a left-of-center evangelical group. We heard from him last week on Billy Graham. Well, he's opining this week on Jesus, what he thought Jesus really came in the world to do. And we'll hear some of his thoughts. He says Jesus cared more about what goes on here on earth than he cares about the afterlife. And then we'll also have an NBC News story on yoga in the classroom, not in the college classroom, not in the high school classroom, not in the middle school classroom, in the elementary school classroom, in the second grade classroom. The kids love it. They say it helps them deal with their already stressful life at 7 or 8. Yoga, apparently, is the answer. We'll get your reaction to that in Audio Open Lines the last half hour of the program. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us here in the studio as we listen to the 60 Minutes feature from last night. Mike Wallace and Jack Kevorkian, Issues ETC at KFUO.org. Jack Kevorkian was paroled from prison after 8 years on Friday last week. And one of the first places he went was to the studios of 60 Minutes for a sit-down interview with Mike Wallace.
Dr. Death has a new lease on life. Jack Kevorkian, who's now 79 years old, was released from prison this past Friday after more than 8 years behind bars. He'd been convicted of murder for ending the life of a terminally ill man, Tom Yauch, even though Yauch and his family had begged Kevorkian to do it. Back in 1998, Kevorkian gave us a tape he had made of Tom Yauch's final minutes, and we aired part of it on 60 Minutes. Kevorkian wanted to force prosecutors to charge him because he believed that by winning in court, he could make euthanasia legal, that is, death by doctor at the request of a terminally ill patient. But he didn't get the verdict he'd expected. Well, now, as a free man, will Kevorkian continue his crusade? To find out, we flew last Friday to the prison in Coldwater, Michigan, for his release.
What do you say, young man?
Hi, Jack.
He says he's looking forward to quiet nights without snoring cellmates. And as we drove out of the prison, he never looked back.
You've waited for a long, long time for this.
Oh, yeah.
You feel like a free man?
No.
What do you mean?
This is a virtual tether. Parole is virtual tether.
And he will be tethered to his parole for 2 years with restrictions designed to prevent him from promoting or participating in assisted suicide.
I can't talk in detail about the procedure or advocate the procedure in certain ways, especially with individuals. I can't do that.
And you can't even advise people how to commit suicide.
I can't counsel anybody, actually.
And you cannot now be present at a suicide or euthanasia?
No.
Without violating your parole, Jack, what will you do to continue your crusade for assisted suicide and euthanasia?
Well, I'm going to work with activist groups trying to get it legalized and putting my voice in with theirs to legalize it whenever I can, either through legislatures or through courts, if possible.
What would you do if a desperate person comes to you, Jack Kevorkian, and says, I need help, someone terminally ill, who comes to you in terrible pain, wants you to lead them to out of their misery? What do you tell them?
Well, it would be painful for me, but I'd have to refuse him because I gave my word that I won't do it again.
That was one of the conditions for you getting out of prison?
That's right.
Now we're going to show you what Jack Kevorkian did that got him sent to prison, which we aired on this broadcast 9 years ago. But be advised that some of you may find what follows quite disturbing.
All right, we're listening to 60 Minutes, the interview last night between Mike Wallace and Jack Kevorkian. It serves in some ways as a bookend to what we're about to hear. They're going to flash back 8 years, about 10 years actually, ago on 60 Minutes, when they first aired another interview with Jack Kevorkian and the videotaped murder of his, well, it's the victim that actually got him sent to prison. Although no one involved, with the exception of the judge and the state that prosecuted him, seemed to think that this was a murder. Kevorkian doesn't think it's a murder. Mike Wallace is willing to admit that it's a merciful murder. The family, by the way, still, and we'll hear a little bit of that as time permits, the family still does not believe that this was a murder. They're all in favor of Jack Kevorkian, and they don't think he ever should have gone to prison. His restrictions of his parole, a little vague as far as I can tell. He cannot actively participate in an assisted suicide, nor can he advise anyone to do so. But apparently he can still advocate for the legalization of assisted suicide where it isn't legal, and he can still grant interviews like this where they're able to show him actually performing an assisted suicide and he's able to defend his actions. But he cannot speak individually with anyone who wants assisted suicide. And he says if someone were to come to him asking for his help in assisting in the suicide, it would be painful, but he would have to refuse. And this is what got him sent to prison 8 years ago.
Here. Tom Yoke led an active life. He restored and raced vintage cars. But at the age of 50, he was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease, a devastating, incurable illness that destroyed his muscles. He lost the use of his legs and then his arms. His family says he was in terrible pain, had trouble breathing and swallowing, and was choking on his own saliva. So they wrote Dr. Kevorkian, who lives nearby, and he videotaped his first meeting with Tom.
Can you move your legs at all?
No.
How about your left arm? Try. That's all you can do? You can't lift your hand off the finger.
Trying to talk to Tom, you learn how bad he was. He couldn't also make intelligible words. Barely intelligible.
Barely. From the tape, you could see barely.
Right.
What is your religion?
Yeah,
do you have any children?
No.
Okay.
And you could see him breathing, gasping, leaning back every time he tried to talk. He couldn't utter more than a few syllables at a time because of the weak muscles. And he was terrified of choking. Terrified.
In that interview 9 years ago, Kevorkian told us he had helped more than 100 people die by having the patient pull the switch to start the lethal drugs flowing. And Tom could have done that. But this time, Kevorkian suggested that he give Tom a lethal injection. He said that was more reliable and more humane, and he wanted to push the public debate from doctor-assisted suicide to euthanasia.
This is better than assisted suicide. I explained that to him. It's better control. Then he did agree, which I think I didn't force him to agree. He did agree.
Maybe you know he agreed?
I had him signed saying that he chose direct injection, and he signed it.
Okay, now I'm going to read it to you, Tom, and I want you to understand. I want to make sure you understand it, and you got to listen closely and stop me if you can't understand it. Mm-hmm. This reads this way: I, Thomas Yolk, the undersigned, entirely voluntarily, without any reservation, external persuasion, pressure, or duress, and after prolonged and thorough deliberation, hereby consent to the following medical procedure of my own choosing, and that you have chosen direct injection, or what they call active euthanasia, to be administered by a competent medical professional in order to end with certainty my intolerable and hopelessly incurable suffering. Did you understand all that? Okay.
Tom signed the statement and thought he was about to die, but Dr. Kevorkian wanted to postpone it to give Tom more time to think it over.
You're sure you thought about this very well now? You don't want to wait another month or so? You want to wait a week? How about 2 weeks? 2 weeks? 1 week? Can you wait 1 week?
Yeah.
All right, at least we'll stretch it out 1 week, okay? Let's not hurry into this.
But I got a call the next night from his brother saying, Tom wants it now. And I couldn't say, well, no, I'm going to make you wait a week.
Well, what was happening?
He just was terrified and getting, he was very afraid of choking to death. And he must have felt that he was on the verge of it. And I couldn't have him suffer in that kind of frame of mind, because if the man is terrified, it's up to me to dispel that terror.
That's Jack Kevorkian in an interview last night on 60 Minutes with Mike Wallace. We're listening to this and getting your reaction. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. It's audio open lines, issues, etc. You can email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Monday, June the 4th, and we're listening to a little bit of 60 Minutes. This is the second major interview that Mike Wallace has done with Jack Kevorkian, and the first one had to do with they're replaying some of that first one and some of the videotape that was shown on 60 Minutes. It was so controversial and eventually had Jack Kevorkian put in prison. Tom Yauch had Lou Gehrig's ALS and was obviously in some distress, but it's interesting the terms that Kevorkian chooses, his intolerable and hopelessly incurable suffering. Now, we should bear in mind that Tom Yauch had ALS, but he was not dying. Will ALS eventually, through its various symptoms and manifestations, kill someone? Yes. But Tom Yauch was not dying. It's not as though he had cancer and the cancer was robbing him of his life. He had severe disabilities due to ALS. The issue here is suffering. When we talked about this last week, Wesley Smith was on the line with us and of the Discovery Institute reacting to Kevorkian's release from prison. And we had a caller from Dallas, I believe, who put her finger right on this issue. And that was that we want a world and we want a life that is free from suffering. You see, the issue for Kevorkian has always been suffering. We heard that little bit, and we'll hear it again as the audio progresses. Jack Kevorkian saying this was a man, yes, but his life wasn't worth it anymore. Why? Because he was suffering. We want a life free of suffering, even if it means ending that life with the physician's assistance. That call came from, it was from Dallas, and Ruth, I believe, her husband had died recently. She had told us about that. Now, I want you to see for a moment, I'm glad Ruth raised that last week. I want you to see for a moment how fundamentally incompatible this desire for a life without suffering is with the Christian faith. Now, lay aside the issue of assisted suicide. Lay aside the issue of euthanasia. Those are big issues. We talk about them all the time here on the air. But I'm talking about when we were watching the Jack Kevorkian interview in pre-production today, Jeff said, this is America. This is the world we live in today. And he's right. This is America. We want a life where we can either prevent or end, one way or the other, all of our suffering. We just don't want to suffer. And yet the Christian faith is founded on the suffering of one man for all. And Christians have understood for millennia that this faith, this trust in Jesus Christ, our suffering, crucified, and risen Savior, embraces suffering, not as good in and of itself, but as another way that God, well, the way that God has brought about the end to sin and its consequences through Christ's suffering and death and resurrection, but also as a gift from God by which he, or I should put it in Pauline terms, by which the suffering of Christ overflows into our lives. It doesn't make suffering pleasant. No, Scripture admits quite open with open eyes. No, suffering is pleasant when you're going through it. We don't love suffering, but we do now receive it as Christians. Should we try to alleviate people's suffering? Yes. But a life free of suffering? No. A life where we shun suffering? It's not something we can do as Christians. Bob is calling from his car. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Pastor Wilkin, how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
I didn't know if I heard him right or not, but Mr. Kevorkian, when he was asked if he was going to participate in these prior activities, he said that, did you notice that he said he gave them his word
yeah.
that he wouldn't do it?
Mm-hmm.
And I just had a couple ideas. I think it's at times like these we are to thank God for our civil law and it's curbing the evil. And it sounds to me like Mr. Kevorkian is committing murder in the name of philanthropy.
That's a good way of putting it, Bob. Thank you very much. Well, yes. What Bob is referring to, of course, is theologians recognize that God has put his law both in the world and written it in our hearts for a number of reasons. Usually the first, but not the foremost, but the first, the most basic reason why God has given us his law, it's often called the first use of the law, is it's described as a curb. It curbs gross outbreaks of sin. It keeps people who are inclined to do evil already from doing it merely by the threats, usually civil, criminal threats, that it's able to issue. This is where the law functions in society in general on all men, and it is simply the threat of force that keeps us from misbehaving. So why do you, they always use the example, why do you drive the speed limit? Well, if you don't, you might get caught, you'll get a ticket, and you'll have to pay some money, which is a mild threat of force. And if, by the way, if you don't pay the money and you get enough of those tickets, you could go to jail, and life could be rather unpleasant for you. You're right, Bob. We should thank God that he's given us his law in general society to curb gross outbreaks of sin, because even with the likes of Jack Kevorkian, he's not willing to, at least at this point, he's not willing to commit his crimes again because, as he says, he gave his word. It was one of the stipulations of his parole. We're watching at least the first use of the law in action. It is sad that the other uses of the law, the other functions of the law, appear, at least at this point, from what we can outwardly judge, to be having little effect on Jack Kevorkian. The foremost use of the law that God uses is to accuse of sin. And he insists, even after 8 years of prison, even after giving his word that he won't do it again, that what he did to Tom Yauch wasn't wrong. In fact, he insists It was the right thing to do, given Tom Yauch's condition.
So two nights after the first visit, Dr. Kevorkian returned. The family had been told to leave before he arrived to avoid possible criminal charges as accessories.
Tom, do you want to go ahead with this?
Yeah.
Shake your head yes if you want to go. All right. I'm going to have you sign again your name, and we're going to date it today, okay? And we're ready to inject. We're going to inject in your right arm. Okay? Okay.
First, the doctor gave him Seconal to put him to sleep quickly.
Sleepy, Tom? Tom, are you asleep? Tom, are you asleep? You asleep? He's asleep.
Then he injected a muscle relaxant to stop his breathing.
And this
paralyzes the muscles.
But he's still alive at this
point. He's still alive, but, and that's why...
Now I can see him breathing just a trifle.
That's why I have to, yes, now you see, now the lack of oxygen is getting to him now. But he's unconscious deeply, so it doesn't matter.
Is he dead now?
He's dying now. Because his oxygen's cut off, he can't breathe. So I'll now quickly inject the potassium chloride to stop the heart.
Now there's a straight line.
He's dead.
Yep. The heart has stopped.
That's Jack Kevorkian with Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes last night. They're playing back the videotape of Kevorkian's murder of Tom Yauch. He put it on videotape. He had Tom Yauch sign a statement saying he knew exactly what he was asking for and exactly what he was doing. He gave Tom Yauch he said, you want to wait a month? You want to wait 2 weeks? You want to wait a week? Tom said, yeah, I'll wait a week and think this over a little bit more. But then the next day, he called Kevorkian back to perform the assisted suicide. And we've just walked through with them the final moments of Tom Yauch's life. And Jack Kevorkian says, yeah, I went to prison for it. Now, we need to bear in mind, he videotaped this and he consented to have the videotape shown about 10 years ago on 60 Minutes because he was trying to force the court's hand. He was hoping that if people saw this, and especially if the court saw this, they would say, well, how could we possibly send anyone to prison for assisting in a suicide? The court thought differently. And he spent 8 years in prison and now is out on parole. Now, I want to know from you, how would you respond to someone who says we should allow mercy killing, euthanasia, that a person suffering from ALS or whatever other condition they have, if they want to die, deserves to die this way with someone like Jack Kevorkian attending? How would you respond? It's audio open lines Monday, June the 4th. This is Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Give us a call during this break. 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. You can also email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. When we come back from this break, we'll hear the rest of the 60 Minutes feature last night on Jack Kevorkian and his release. 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Many Christians think that because the Old Testament Psalms are a collection of hymns and poetry from David and from other Old Testament poets, that the Psalms are really only about the lives of David and those other Old Testament figures. Nothing could be further from the truth. The Old Testament Psalms are also about Christ. Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for June is called Reading the Psalms with Luther. It's a Christ-centered, cross-focused reading of the Old Testament Psalms, just as they were intended to be read. The book is $14.99 plus shipping and handling. Find out more by calling Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or find Reading the Psalms with Luther at our homepage, issuesetc.org. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
Where does the current generation stand on the abortion issue?
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List. named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
A recently published article in the New York Times Magazine finds that young Americans aged 18 to 25 are more pro-life than the generation before them. 15% favor banning abortion altogether, and 50% support restricting access to abortions. Only one-third of them want abortion to be generally available, whereas the figure for those aged 50 to 64 is 35%. The past decade's trend of more young people taking the pro-life position continues unabated and shows no sign of changing anytime soon.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org. That's sba-list.org.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, where values thrive, and online at thrivent.com.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Think worldwide. Three men, including an American, were arrested for plotting a massive attack on New York's JFK Airport. The ringleader, the American, planned an attack so terrible that, quote, even the Twin Towers can't touch it. They operated largely out of Trinidad and Guyana, two places not known as hostile to the United States. Also this weekend, American forces bombed an area in the African country of Somalia, a place where terrorists were thought to be hiding. It is a worldwide war on terror. This weekend, my travels took me to a Chinese Christian congregation. And what a reminder it was to hear my sermon translated into Cantonese and Mandarin. Jesus promised, "This gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations," Matthew 24:14. "And we know heaven will be filled with people from every nation, people, tribe, and language," Revelation 7:9. Now, this too is worldwide. God is working against evil that keeps people in bondage to sin and strife. Wars and rumors of war will continue, and America may win or lose. But followers of Jesus are eternally optimistic. "The one who is in you is greater than the one who is in the world," 1 John 4:4. A slogan of the Chinese congregation says, "Think globally." That's true in both wars.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, online at thrivent.com. We do more than work. We work with a purpose.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. For the next 25 minutes, we're going to continue listening to the 60 Minutes interview between Mike Wallace and Jack Kevorkian. It aired last night on CBS. We're talking about it today on Issues Etc. If you saw it and you want to react, give us a call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. If you didn't see it and you're just hearing it for the first time, we also invite your reaction. 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, at this point, they've just finished watching the videotape that was made 10 years ago by Jack Kevorkian, the videotape that eventually sent him to prison, his murder of Tom Yauch, and Tom Yauch has just died on the videotape. The Kevorkian had given him an injection to put him to sleep, and then a muscle relaxant to essentially slow his breathing to the point of where he was going to die of asphyxiation, and then finally gave him an injection to stop the heart. And that is Jack Kevorkian's preferred method of assisted suicide. By the way, if you weren't following the news at the time, you may, or lately, you may not know that Tom Yauch was just the last of Jack Kevorkian's victims. He claims to have assisted personally in 130 suicides. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Of course, the question always is, what does the family think about this? The family actually was right behind Jack Kevorkian, rooting for him the whole way, and they still are.
Tom's family, his wife, Melody, brothers, Terry and Bob, and his mother, Betty, all say Tom was a fighter, but that he finally decided he needed Dr. Kevorkian.
I was so grateful to know that someone would relieve him of his suffering. I don't consider it murder. I consider it humane. I consider it the way things should be.
And I take it that you would not be sitting here unless you thought it was useful, socially useful, to have this broadcast.
Absolutely. We were at the end of our rope. We didn't have any options. Mm-hmm. And if it weren't for Dr. Kevorkian, I'm not sure what we would have done.
What the prosecutors did after seeing our broadcast was to charge Dr. Kevorkian with murder. He had wanted a trial, but he didn't get the trial he'd expected. The judge did not let Tom Yoke's relatives testify or allow evidence about Yoke's condition. The judge ruled that since the charge was murder, the key legal issue was whether Kevorkian had caused Tom Yoke's death, and his own tape proved that he had. The world's most famous mercy killer received no mercy from Judge Jessica Cooper.
You had the audacity to go on national television, show the world what you did, and dare the legal system to stop you. Well, sir, consider yourself stopped.
That's the judge in the Kevorkian case 8 years ago. Now, what do you think about this? I mean, I asked before the break, if someone were to come up to you and say, look, someone who has ALS like Tom Yauch, someone who has some other condition, maybe even if it is terminal, and I will point out again, Tom Yauch's condition was not terminal. It was chronic. That means he was going to die with ALS, but it was not killing him at the time. Was he suffering? Yes. I can't imagine someone in those stages of ALS that isn't suffering. He was suffering. But as far as Kevorkian was concerned, he called it intolerable, helpless, and hopelessly incurable suffering. The family said, and the brother has been out in the media all over the place, more than Kevorkian himself lately, saying, we had no choice. Our only option was Jack Kevorkian. Now, if his brother was genuinely dying, there would have been all sorts of other options, like hospice. Now, his brother wasn't dying. I don't want to lay the blame at the family's doorstep, although I think they deserve a fair amount of it because, they were behind Jack Kevorkian the whole time rooting. But I can understand the desperation that they felt and that Tom Yauch felt. Jack Kevorkian, as the physician involved here, so to speak, certainly had sympathy for them. I wonder how the family feels about the fact that for Kevorkian, this was more about proving his case in court than about Tom Yauch. This was more about trying to see to it that physician-assisted suicide as his issue was made legal than about Tom Yauch or relieving his suffering. Apparently, they're okay with that. Stephen St. Louis writes us via email. He says, the caller from Dallas made a great point. He's talking about Ruth's call last week from Dallas. This view of wanting to avoid suffering and that the Christian life is to be without suffering has found its way into the Christian church. You see this in evangelical churches which purposely remove the suffering of Christ from their worship. Good point, Steve. In both the words and the songs as well as crosses or feel-good theology about the good life, many churches preach a crossless Christianity since we don't want to hear about Christ's suffering for our sins, but we want to hear about our best life now, writes Steve. He concludes, in Paul's letters, he would refer to the joy of suffering for the gospel. We are so far from this understanding of suffering. That's true. Now, you can chalk it up to the American dream, which is if you work hard and play by the rules, then you shouldn't really have to suffer that much. Especially if you play by the rules of eating right and getting plenty of exercise, you should expect to live into your eighth decade and beyond without suffering. Oh, by the way, just a moment in this interview, we're going to hear Jack Kevorkian reflecting a bit on his own health because he is now an octogenarian himself. Look, I think it's as deplorable if you find it in Jack Kevorkian saying, look, the way to end suffering is to put these people out of their misery, as it is this false sales pitch that Christianity offers the average suburbanite, that if they become a Christian, if they decide to love Jesus, then he can alleviate their suffering. There's no such promise. Kent's calling from his car. Hi, Kent.
Hi, Todd. As you may or may not know, I'm an attorney working in a healthcare setting, and I find it curious that the American Medical Association, other prominent medical bodies, don't have a problem with their members killing the infirm or the disabled or performing abortions, but they express righteous indignation that a physician might ever be involved in an execution. And I'd submit to you that if the first part of the Hippocratic, which is to say, is first do no harm, I've got an idea. How about harming or not harming the most defenseless among us, and then taking a completely opposite tack when it's politically and liberally expedient? That's all I got.
Thank you very much, Ken. Oh, I think he's got more than that. He's just holding back. Thank you very much, Kent. Well, in fact, if you look at the original Hippocratic Oath, which, let's just admit, it doesn't count for anything in medical circles anymore. I don't know that there are many medical schools that have it as anything other than just a nice-looking plaque on the wall, whether or not it's taken seriously in its content. But if you look at the original Hippocratic Oath, the ancient one, it actually does prohibit the physician. He takes a vow not to cause an abortion. And it is sadly, tragically ironic. You're right, Kent, that this is a medical community that by and large will blanch at the idea of a physician being asked to go into a penitentiary and assist in what they would call state-sponsored murder, perhaps, but in fact an execution where it's perfectly legal in whatever state it's legal. They would blanch at any doctor doing this, but abortion, a physician-assisted suicide? Maybe it would make a difference if the person on death row wanted to die, considered their time in prison intolerable and hopelessly incurable suffering. Would that make a difference? You know, it is a can of worms that is opened. If I'm sitting on death row and I've been there for a couple decades, which is not unusual anymore, being bounced around by the legal system, and I finally decide that my time there in solitary confinement is intolerable, hopelessly incurable suffering, in the words of Jack Kevorkian, why can't I get a Kevorkian in to perform my execution? Why do I have to wait on the legal system? Why do I have to wait on the prison system? If I feel like I'm suffering. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address this Monday, the 4th of June, issues, etc@kfuo.org.
She sentenced him to 10 to 25 years. With time off for good behavior, he's served 8.5. And now that he's free, he's as feisty as ever.
I want you to live up to your reputation.
Well, what's that? Tough?
You've got to strafe me.
Oh, all right. You regret helping Tom Yolk?
No, why would I? Why would I regret that?
Well,
that's like asking a veterinarian, do you regret helping that person's animal? You know, no, a vet wouldn't say yes.
Well, wait a minute, Tom Yolk. I mean, but he was a man. And it was a compassionate murder, but you murdered him.
But it was a man whose life didn't measure up anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, David Hume said it. No man ever threw away a life while it was worth keeping.
But you're the judge of whether it's worth keeping.
No, the patient's the judge.
After we showed you ending Tom Yolk's life, we got an avalanche of letters from people with Lou Gehrig's disease, mm-hmm, and from their families who thought that by helping Tom,
mm-hmm,
you were implying that all patients who had Lou Gehrig's disease should kill themselves.
Well, that's what they assumed.
You think that all people with Lou Gehrig's disease should kill themselves?
Of course not. I think the ones who go on suffering and without complaining and want, I think that's laudable.
Did making Tom Yoke's death public and the means by which, did that advance your cause or set it back?
That's an iffy question. I don't know if it advanced it more than it set it back.
While he was in prison, three states voted on whether to legalize assisted suicide. All three states voted no. Oregon is still the only state that permits it.
We're listening to a 60 Minutes interview with Mike Wallace and Jack Kevorkian. Jack Kevorkian was released on parole last week on Friday after 8 years in prison for the murder of Tom Yauch. He did admit to assisting in 130 assisted suicides before he finally was, before the legal system finally caught up with him. It is, you know what the most tragic thing, well, not the most tragic thing, but one of the most tragic things about this legally is that it took Jack Kevorkian, 130 people he killed, in order to even get the prosecutor's attention, apparently, and the judge's attention, he had to do it on videotape and broadcast it on Sunday night on 60 Minutes with Mike Wallace attending. It took that before someone said, maybe it's time to stop you. Now, we were talking with Wesley Smith last week. I asked him the question, the same question that Mike Wallace asked Kevorkian there. Do you think Kevorkian's actions and his prison time did anything to help the physician-assisted suicide movement or the euthanasia movement? And his response was, well, I think his response was on the balance, it didn't hurt. There are a lot of people who are trying to back off of Jack Kevorkian because he seems kind of ghoulish. But Wesley rightly pointed out that their aims, their goals, their legal aspirations with regard to euthanasia and assisted suicide are precisely the same as Jack Kevorkian's. They're just wondering whether Kevorkian makes a good poster child for their cause. Let's hear the rest of this interview between Mike Wallace and Jack Kevorkian.
Oregon's assisted suicide law. It's been in effect 10 years. Fewer than 300 people have committed suicide under that law.
That's right.
Are you surprised the number's so low?
No. Many people, once they know they can do this, the panic dissipates from their mind. They now have control, which they didn't before. And they tolerate the pain much better.
Treatment for pain has vastly improved. Does that reduce the need for assisted suicide?
Well, that's one advantage of the campaign. It forced doctors to do that.
Why does euthanasia have to be legal? It's an open secret that every day, all across the country, doctors end the suffering of the terminally ill.
Sure.
Patients who want their death hastened, usually by increasing their morphine.
Right. Right.
They don't call it death by doctor, but that's what it is.
There's where the law creates immorality in medicine. Any act, medical act, should never be done in an atmosphere of fear and concern and secrecy. Doctors now are sneaking around and doing it.
If you make death by doctor legal, wouldn't you be making suicide too easy for people who are depressed who should be getting treatment instead?
That's a medical thing. The doctors will determine, is this genuine or not? Is this depression or not? Mm-hmm. Who else but doctors know what depression is? They can tell.
You're now 79 years old, huh?
Yep, and I've entered my 80th year.
How healthy are you?
Just fair. I used to pride myself on my health, but that liver disease is right. It concerns me.
Really?
Yeah.
I understand that you make $980 a month currently.
I don't know. It's been a while since I saw any income.
From Social Security and your pension.
Right.
Hospital pension, right?
Right.
So what are you going to do to support Jack Kevorkian after now that you're a free man?
That's enough for Jack Kevorkian because I have...
Oh, come on.
I'm single. It's easy. I don't care for... You can see I don't care for fancy clothes.
You're a happy man, aren't you?
Well,
you're
content.
A happy man.
I'm content.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, I'm doing what I think's important. When you do these things, then, like Bernard Shaw says, man doing that can never lose his self-respect. And that's all that matters.
All right, there's the interview. Mike Wallace, last night on 60 Minutes with Jack Kevorkian, freshly released from prison last week. Your thoughts, your reaction, if you saw it last night or if you've just heard it for the first time, 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. It's audio open lines, issues, etc. today. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Coming up here in about 10 minutes, in hour two, Brent McGuire will be our guest. We're going to talk about what he calls Jesus' impossible prayer in Gethsemane. We all know the prayer. Let this cup pass from me, the picture of Jesus in agony, in some would say fear and trepidation. What is Jesus anticipating? Is it the physical suffering of the torture and the trial and the cross? Or is there something else at work? We'll answer that question coming up in about 10 minutes here on Issues, etc. Actually, a good conversation to have after letting Jack Kevorkian have his say on the solution to human suffering. At the end of our interview with Wesley Smith, he said something like, it stuck in my mind, he said something like, death becomes the answer to life's suffering. And that's what Jack Kevorkian has in common, not only with the assisted suicide and the euthanasia and the death with dignity movement, but also with a lot of us. We think of death as ultimately the solution for life's suffering. You know, in the end, we'll say this when someone dies, especially after a terminal illness, we'll say, well, I've caught myself saying it. I don't know why we say this. At least they're not suffering anymore. And I know there's a desire to alleviate suffering, which is a good impulse. Don't get me wrong. But we consider death to be a relief from suffering, when in fact death isn't a relief from suffering. It's kind of the dead-end road that is suffering. Suffering leading to death. Death is no relief from anything. Death is not an answer. It's a question for which God has supplied his answer in the death and resurrection of Jesus. What I'm saying here is that we Christians, should never regard death as a welcome friend. It isn't a friend. It's still a foe. It's a defeated foe. But it's still a foe. Herman's calling from Illinois. Hi, Herman.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. I'm going to make what might seem to be a far-fetched connection here between Dr. Kevorkian and his advocacy of euthanasia and those who join with him to the junction within the environmental movement. There is also a radical fringe that advocates the euthanasia or extermination of a significant part of the human race so that animals can roam the planet freely and there will be no pollution, et cetera, et cetera. It's if there is sort of a euthanasia Nazism that seems to be cropping up and without a Christian worldview to be poised against it solidly, that these type of lopsided notions can continue to be foisted into the public media.
Herman, thank you very much. I think you actually do have a point. I don't know if it's that far-fetched. What you're talking about are the presuppositions that lie behind different conclusions. We see the similarity between those conclusions because when the notion is that the real problem is that life is the real problem for which only death is the solution, you're gonna come up with all sorts of, I like your term, lopsided ideas. Not just lopsided, upside down ideas.
I think what the governor did and what New Hampshire's done is a great example for the rest of the country.
That was Democratic presidential candidate John Edwards speaking at a debate last night. in Manchester, New Hampshire. Senator Edwards says that he's glad that New Hampshire's governor has signed a legislation that legalized same-sex civil unions. Senator Edwards wasn't done, however. He's given his thoughts on same-sex unions elsewhere, but I guess New Hampshire only afforded him the opportunity to reiterate how he feels about same-sex unions.
I don't think the federal government has a role in telling either states or religious institutions, churches, what marriages they can bless and can't bless. I think the state of New Hampshire ought to be able to make that decision for itself, like every other state in the country. I think every church ought to be able to make that decision for itself.
Well, this is interesting because the issue is never what unions or marriages or whatever you want to call them, churches want to bless. I mean, if churches wanted to marry the sofa to the end table, they can do that. The state has never really considered any part of their business. The question isn't what churches are permitted to do or not permitted to do, or required to do for that matter. The question is, what will the state sanction as marriage? That's the only issue here, whether it's New Hampshire or Massachusetts or anywhere else. So we do know where at least one of the front runners, he's third, I believe, in the Democratic ticket, or at least the Democratic crowd for president in 2008, Jonathan Edwards. We know where he stands on the issue of same-sex unions, probably where he'll stand if he makes it to the White House, too. Just a little, you know, since they're going to be talking about these issues, and these issues will come up again after we do have a president in 2008, kind of nice to know where the various candidates stand. Our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for June is called Reading the Psalms with Luther. Yes, it is June, and that means a new Book of the Month. This one is a devotional book. It's basically the entire Psalter, that is the entire Book of Psalms, with an introduction before each psalm from Luther. And what makes these introductions unique is that every one of them points to how we can find, either in study or devotional use, Christ in the Psalms. The book is called Reading the Psalms with Luther. It's $14.99 plus shipping and handling. Find it at our website, issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and ask for Reading the Psalms with Luther. The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for June, their number 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. When we come back from this break, we've got hour two of Issues, Etc., straight ahead. Pastor Brent McGuire will join us to talk about Jesus' impossible prayer before his trial and his suffering and his crucifixion in Gethsemane. We'll be talking with Pastor Matt Nelson about the Bible and the environment. Is God green? He answers that question coming up here in about an hour on the program. And then the last half hour of Issues, Etc. today is more audio open lines. We'll hear from Brian McLaren. Last week we heard from him on Billy Graham. He liked the new Billy Graham. Billy Graham that believes that everybody's going to heaven even if they believe in Jesus or not, and Brian McLaren likes it. We'll hear what Brian McLaren has to say about Jesus himself. Why does he think Jesus came into the world? He says, well, probably has more to do with our behavior here in this life than our destiny in the next. That's coming up in about an hour and a half here on Issues, Etc., audio open lines. We'll talk about Jesus' prayer in Gethsemane next.
Where Christianity meets culture. You're listening to Issues, Etc.